You're listening to the 12th episode of The Gear Heart. I'm your reader, writer, and host, Alex White. Renee White is the voice of our female characters. If you haven't had a chance yet, or you're listening on iTunes or PodioBooks.com, you can stop by the Gear Heart blog and interact at www.thegearheart.com. There you'll find podcaster interviews, articles, the Gear Heart soundtrack, and more. Or you can email me directly at alex@thegearheart.com. Don't forget that you can also follow us on Twitter, username TheGearHeart. And now, settle in, pour a cup of tea, and enjoy as we bring you more tales of the Gear Heart. Last time on the Gear Heart, Jonathan and the others arrive at the Seeker headquarters in Cerceval, and Jonathan wonders if the Seekers are truly fair. Wallaby, Buskerton, and Crust acquire a new body by force and speak of dark plans. What sort of designs do they have on the Fumiston chapter? Find out on the Gear Heart. The main entrance to the Seeker House was simple enough. A set of wooden double doors with a fairly innocuous crest hung on the left-hand side. Inside, however, was a palatial hall, wreathed in perfect craftsmanship and elegant materials. Glass gave way to sumptuous hardwoods, which flowed into mortar and brass, and all of the architectural elements of the ancient institution were perfectly incorporated into one another. The floor that stretched before Cog, Jonathan, and Keegan was a long train of coats of arms, created by what appeared to be gemstones and laid into the marble. The 12 crests were only interrupted by a large mahogany front desk for greeting incoming personnel. Keegan quickly explained to Jonathan that the 12 crests were there to represent the families of the original 12 knights, but Jonathan scarcely noticed. He was too busy looking at the brilliant brass and crystal chandeliers that hung from the buttressed ceiling 80 feet above them. "This is incredible," Jonathan mumbled.
"Isn't it?" asked Keegan.
They approached the front desk, and Jonathan saw that the other side of the furnishing looked like an organ from all of the pneumatic message tubes that lined its interior. Jonathan admired the way that the mahogany contrasted against the brass, and made a half-hearted attempt to examine the rest of the instrumentation on the desk. The old fellow manning the post gave them a hard look.
"You're new here," the guardsman grumbled at Jonathan. "I can always spot the new ones."
"And why is that?" Jonathan asked, frowning.
"Because, with all due respect, it's always the starry-eyed kids that come in and look at the pipes like they've never seen a machine before."
"With all due respect? Well, with all due respect, you're a crotchety old weirdo. How come you didn't yell at her? She's new, too," asked Jonathan, pointing to Cog.
Cog's emotionless face surveyed the marvelous desk with an utterly unimpressed look.
"He couldn't tell that I was new because I think his little toy is sophomoric."
"Now listen here, missy, you need to respect your elders."
Cog's eyes became venomous.
"Perhaps you should consider doing the same, old man, because I'm a lot older than you."
"There, there, Cog, let's calm down now," Keegan assuaged. "Sir, they're only new to the main chapter and they're under my command."
The old guardsman gave them a quick, appraising glance and turned back to Keegan.
"That may well be, but they can't just go around acting like they've got a rank to pull in here."
"Actually, they're initiates. Field commission," Keegan replied.
"Well then, initiates," the old guardsman laughed. "Sign right in."
And with that, he slammed down a massive visitor's ledger in front of them, the thud echoing through the Antaean main hall. "Isn't there some way that they could magically track the visitors or something?" Jonathan remarked as he scribbled his signature onto the page.
"Maybe, kid, but all that hocus pocus would put me out of a job."
"And what a shame that would be," the young man muttered under his breath, though he hoped that the old man would hear him as he shoved the book away. When Jonathan looked back at the old man, though, the guardsman was a shade paler than he had been before.
The man at the desk removed his spectacles from his front pocket with shaking hands, and donned them once more to look at Jonathan's signature.
"What?
Jonathan laughed nervously. Your name is Jonathan Andrews. Jonathan exchanged confused glances with Keegan and Cog, and his expression became nonplussed. That is what I wrote, sir. The old man took off his glasses and gave Jonathan a sympathetic look. Then I'm sorry to be the one to tell you this, but the Seeress is requesting your presence. Now? Jonathan asked, wide-eyed. Right now. Good luck, lad. The sky was a particularly dark shade of blue, as winter's chill wrung the color out of it. Isabel sat alone on the veranda, overlooking the rest of the palace district all the way down to the harbor. With all of the roofs and spires, it seemed as though the girl was in a stone forest, looking out upon a clearing. The wind blew sharply against her face, but she didn't care. She was wrapped in an immaculate fur coat, though both the coat and her shimmering hair seemed black in the winter light. A pale cast had overtaken her skin, and the only specks of color were her deep emerald eyes and her reddened nose. She reached out with a gloved hand and took her hot cider from the nearby patio table and took a sip. Its warmth rolled down her throat, but the chill air had already cooled her lips, and the liquid burned them fiercely. Behind her, a door opened, and she heard footsteps against the mosaic floor of the veranda. "Why are you out here? I thought you'd be inside on a day like today," came Jonathan's voice. A defeated smile crossed Isabel's lips.
"I thought you were going to be inside your cage,"
she replied.
"I didn't want to see you alone, Jonathan. How did you find me?"
"You know, just traipsing around the rooftops, and there you were."
"Right. Well, don't get used to that."
She heard an angry sigh from Jonathan, but he didn't speak. The wind kicked up and cut across her cheeks. Isabel shook a little, but it wasn't because she was cold. Everything around her was so gray, so pale in the embrace of the snowdrifts, and the clouds stretched across the sky like train tracks. Isabel fleetingly wished that she could ride one away from there, across the sea and back to her home.
"So, have you talked about what's to become of you?"
she asked. "No," Jonathan breathed. "I have to see the Seeress before we decide anything."
"You have to see the Seeress? Wouldn't her job description indicate that she's seen you already?"
Isabel asked humorlessly. "Yeah, well, if that were true, they would have scooped me up when I was young. But yes, I'm going to see her, and they're going to tell me whether or not I have power." The world seemed really distant to the young woman, as though everything was contained in their little platform. It was very much like they were on a stage before the city, and the only two people who really existed were the two of them. She didn't want to turn around. "It's likely, though, that they'll say I do," and he paused. "And I don't have to tell you what that means." Isabel couldn't feel her lips curl under, but she knew what face she was making. Her eyes suddenly seemed so cold, and she squinted out to see the distance, but her vision got too blurry. She closed her eyes, and a single stinging tear made its way down each cheek.
"Why are you engaging in this pointless altruism? We already have one Seeress,"
Isabel said, trying not to waver in her voice.
"What can you possibly see that she can't?"
"Everything. If I don't do this, it will hurt everyone on the planet, Isabel." Isabel opened up her reddened eyes, but was no longer able to control her voice.
"Well, what other options have you considered that don't involve giving up the rest of your life for a bunch of people you don't know?"
"What?" Her anger subsiding, she slumped deeper into her chair.
"You haven't thought about any alternatives, have you? You're just content to go away,"
she whispered. She heard the footsteps that carried him closer. Isabel could almost feel his presence over her right shoulder, but she dared not to look back. She didn't want him to see her face. "I'm sure that there's no group in the world that knows more about visions than the Seekers, Isabel. At least, we'd have to find them, and I don't know if there's time for that," Jonathan began, and Isabel felt the pressure of his hand on her shoulder. She couldn't feel its warmth through her coat, but she strained her senses to try.
"But you can at least try to search. Why does everything have to happen before you've even tried?"
Jonathan's fingers twitched a bit. "Because I don't have faith that I'll find anything. I can't take that chance when..." Isabel took a deep breath and waited for the inevitable. She waited for him to tell her that everyone was in danger, and then spout off something about civic duty. She waited for him to feed her lines from the adventure novels she used to find in his room when they were children. She could hear him fumbling the words, trying to figure out what to say that would justify his actions. "I can't take that chance when you're the one in danger." Her heart froze and the tears came freely. Her lips trembled and her whole body shook. She could hear his quivering breaths as well, and she wanted to turn around to him. Something stopped her, though. Isabel was suddenly terrified of looking into his eyes. She was afraid that he would see right through her to all of her weaknesses. More than that, though, she was afraid of what she would see looking back at her. She sunk deeper into her fur coat and listened in silence to the whistling of the wind. She heard the scratch of his shoe on the tile and knew that he was turning to leave.
"Jonathan!"
she called, shutting her eyes tightly. The footsteps stopped.
"Jonathan, I need to know something,"
said Isabel. The sounds of the palace district echoed about them, but no reply came from Jonathan. She knew he waited for her question.
"Why haven't you ever... why didn't we..."
Isabel began, the words issuing in stilted chunks as the tears rolled out of her closed eyes. Without warning, she felt the warmth of Jonathan's lips upon hers and his hand running through her hair. Isabel could taste him so perfectly and breathed in his breath. She craned her neck to lean into the kiss, but she couldn't bring herself to move her arms to hold him. Feebly, she reached up with one hand to touch his wrist, but couldn't feel anything through her gloves. Then the lips were gone as quickly as they'd come. She lurched forward a bit, trying to follow, but was met only with the wind. Determined not to simply let him go, Isabel opened her eyes. But she didn't see Jonathan. She saw the flawless, smooth face of the hangman, the molten shadows that cloaked him lapping against the sides of his face. He caught both of her hands before she could even think to sign a glyph, and gave her the same kind of smile he'd given her at the dance. It awakened in her a primal fear that surpassed screams and flight, leaving her melting in front of him like a frightened rabbit.
"And the lady kisses her knight,"
came the hangman's unctuous voice.
"How nostalgic."
Through the disgust and terror, Isabel could only manage one feeble word.
"How?"
The hangman's smile grew wider, and he mustered a coy look through his sunny cherry blossom eyes.
"Alchemy and forethought. My dear, I know everything. I've been with you ever since the wondrous night whence we first met."
Then he leaned in closer and whispered into her ear.
"And I want you to know,"
he began. His breath wasn't warm anymore. Rather, his face seemed to chill the air around them, and the frost of his touch sunk into Isabel's core.
"That I'll be with you until the end as well."
And he pressed his palm against her sternum. In a flash of light, something inside of Isabel cracked like she'd been struck by a cannonball, but it wasn't bone. Her breath shot from her mouth in a sudden, spasmodic cough, and her eyes grew wide. A cold sweat erupted from all of her pores, drenching her hairs. She tried to breathe inward, but nothing came. The cold air seared her constricted airways, and she collapsed forward onto the hangman's arms. Her jerking breaths were like little screams, and the man softly hushed her as he brushed her hair out of her eyes.
"You're not dead yet, my dear,"
he comforted.
"You might even come to live a long and healthy life, like me."
He gently maneuvered her into a cradling position, so that she could more helplessly look into his face.
"But the fracture I gave you isn't on your body, and no one has ever fixed mine, so I doubt you'll be here much longer."
He tossed her to the ground, and her head slammed against the tile, causing stars to fill her eyes. She gasped and clawed at his legs, but he merely stepped away. He turned to leave, but his eyes never broke contact with hers.
"I want you to tell your friends to come and find me in the ruins of Antonello Manor in Keldenorm. Serve me well, and die with dignity."
Then he stepped onto the balcony railing and leapt off, leaving Isabel alone with the wind.
What has the hangman done to Isabel? Will her friends ever see her again, or will she die alone on the rooftop? Find out next time on The Gearheart. This podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works 3.0 license.
For more information, visit creativecommons.org.
Now for a word from our sponsors. Are you worried that your son doesn't have anything to do for the summer? Send him to Camp Wanakiliman, where he can join the illustrious Bounty Scouts. Don't waste time on gathering worthless badges from those goody-two-shoes, posy-picking coward camps. At Camp Wanakiliman, we will teach your son the deadly arts. Our skills include tracking, survival, navigation, rope use, model rocketry, archery, and marksmanship. So send your lily-livered, namby-pamby dandy of a boy to us, and we'll send you back a hard-biting, hard-fighting bull of a man. Today's podcast has been brought to you by Camp Wanakiliman off 295 South, just past Bud's Video and Tannin. And by Hank Shanks, Gifts for the Guilty. Have you had a loved one recently shipped off to prison, only to be without a trusty blade? Call Hank Shanks for one of our lovingly handcrafted shivs. We have a variety of models, including the Stabinator, the Silencio, and the Esquire. Or select our utility shiv, complete with lockpick, garrote wire, and corkscrew for those particularly vengeful days. Choose from any three gift wrapping styles: red velvet, chocolate, or lemon butter cream. Hank Shanks for the gift that keeps on shipping.